Why go to all the trouble of experiencing the great outdoors for yourself when you can listen to a few Northwest Outdoor experts yap about it? This is The Outdoor Line with Tom Nelson, Rob Ensley, and Joey Pyburn on 710 ESPN Seattle and the 710 ESPN Seattle app. The Outdoor Line is brought to you by Yamaha, Sportco Outdoor Emporium, Lowrance, Weldcraft, and Duckworth Boats, Roy Robinson Chevrolet, Kitsap Marina, Harbor Marine, Truck Vault, and Rain Marine Electronics.
Welcome to Hour 2 of the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN Seattle. Tom Nelson coming at you from Sitka, Alaska with Bruce Larson of Wellcraft Duckworth, Marine Industry Insider Phil Spielgeen, and my dear friend Joel Martin of FishBaronoff.com, who just had the distinct honor and challenge of telling a dozen Seattle firefighters that it's too rough for them to go out in boats today. How did you do? Dude, I have been dealing with these guys, and I know them all, you know, personally, and they're good guys, but that had...
Number one word, safety.
Safety.
That's it.
Yeah.
Unfishable, and it's safety.
So what is the forecast? It's a full-on gale today.
Yeah, southeast, I think 20 to 30 knots.
Yeah, 35 I saw, actually. So, you know, so it is what it is. So how do you handle that situation? How does that work from your end?
I just... to give everybody an option to stay on the inside waters and try to be fair about it and give everybody the option. It's just better to stay home.
Yeah, no question about it.
Be on the beach.
Yeah. So we'll definitely you know, kind of talk about this, you know, and I'll make sure that
the look in their eyes was not good. They didn't like it at all.
Yeah, I hear you there, buddy. So you know, tell us a little bit about the operation in general and you know, how Fish Baronoff works. We covered it a little bit last week, but you know, what can folks expect when they get to Sitka if there's not a gale?
It's you're going to rent a boat and go catch some fish.
Yeah.
It's pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah. No doubt about it.
You know, the boats come loaded with gear and, the guys go out and catch fish, have fun.
So from your perspective, the numbers of Chinook this year compared to last year?
A lot more.
Yeah, I agree.
I
completely agree.
It's been a good bite. The halibut fishing's been great when the guys can get on the water.
Yep.
Lingcod fishing's really good since they raised that up to a 40-inch slot.
Yeah, so last year it was 30 to 35 inches. This year it's the non-resident is 30 to 40 inches.
Correct. And it sure is making some nice fish.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Way better opportunity for people.
40-inch lingcod has some pretty, pretty wonderful fillets on it, no question
yes.
about it. So how do folks orient themselves? You got plotters on all these boats, and you got some waypoints. So specifically, you kind of do it. You do a safety orientation with them, then you kind of do a bit of a chart drill.
Yeah, we go over the charts on the wall and give everybody a big picture, and then I show everybody on the GPS the route they're supposed to leave in the channel and get them all orientated in that. And, you know, we all work together here, so there's always a boat left from yesterday that's fishing today, and the guys all work together, and it makes it a lot safer that way. I'm not throwing anybody out in the dark.
Yeah, that's it, too. And the information sharing is what I'm impressed with. It's like, look, there's no secrets. You got your fish here. You know, this is what you got them on that depth. I mean, everybody's sharing information, and that way everybody, you know, has a legitimate shot. But, you know, I know these guys in particular, they've been here before, and that's the real gem is the ability to come back, and they already have some familiarity with this. But if you go to a new fishery and the first time you see these contours is on the chart plotter when you're physically on that spot, you've lost an opportunity to learn, man. If you do chart study of an area before you fish it, then you look at that chart on your plotter. Oh, okay. I remember that, right? Mm-hmm. You get the little ripple of confidence roll through your gut, right? And, mm-hmm. and confidence kills fish.
Mm-hmm.
But the more you prepare for a destination fishery with chart study, with learning about the gear, with learning about the timing, the more successful you're going to be.
Yeah, and most of these guys that come up here, I tell everybody, this is not the same bottom that you have in Washington or Oregon off the coast or California. This is when that volcano blew up, it created a Jurassic Park out there that it's just full of pinnacles and structure, and nobody realizes it until they get here and actually start studying the charts. And a lot of these guys are such good, savvy fishermen that they have already studied the charts. They already have print offs. They already know where they're going. They've looked at the forums. And so they're ahead of the curveball. The guys that show up here that have never been here before, even if they don't know how to fish, it's always day one seems to be a training wheel day.
Yeah.
But I had a group of guys here last week that had never been here before. They were lost with our waters, and they went home with all of them went home with almost two boxes of fish, and it was almost all white meat. And, you know, we were right before our big king salmon flood had hit us, and it's just been great fishing this year.
It has been.
It's truly, just been great.
Truly. And I do want to roll back to something you just mentioned, though, with regard to the volcano and that tremendous structure out there. So what we're talking about, if you jump online and just type in Mount Edgecombe or type in Cruise Off Island, you're talking about the volcano, which is just a dead ringer for Japan's Mount Fuji out there when you can see it, which you haven't seen it yet. You've seen the bottom. It's like yesterday was fishing in a glass of milk, dude. You couldn't see much. But we ran around the Cape, and somebody commented on, look at that structure down there, and it is absolutely jagged. But I'd never really thought about it the way you just mentioned it. But yeah, when the top of that blew off, and a lot of that went in the water, it resulted in some amazing structure, some amazing jagged ups and downs that will stick an anchor if you're anchoring in the wrong spot. Right?
That is correct.
And you have a couple of floating balls out there right now. With
correct.
Guys that, yeah, but. That's not where you would want to anchor for halibut anyway. What you don't want to be anchoring in rocky boulder gardens.
You're looking for a food bowl.
Yes, you are.
That's the bottom line. If it's a food bowl up on top of a ridge or a food bowl at the bottom of a ridge, you're just looking for that place where feed can fall and, you know, a good flat 300-foot contour, not necessarily sandy bottom. A lot of these halibut you're catching out there have got red bellies or cruising across the top of the lava, and they don't. It's just a flat bottom. That's all they care about.
Yeah. And that's interesting.
Some of the best rock halibut fishing is in the areas where you catch all those yellow eye.
Yeah, they are.
And
some of the biggest ones. And I've seen this at Nea Bay, and I've seen it, you know, in Washington waters too, where you will encounter huge halibut while you're jigging for black rock fish, mm-hmm. for instance, right? Mm-hmm. In some of that structure. Mm-hmm. But it's not where they're going to stay for long. They come in there and feed ostensibly on the rockfish that you're trying to catch, mm-hmm. right? But the rest of the time, if you're going to anchor in a location, you don't want to anchor in jagged rocks. You're looking for that transition of gravel to sand or black sand, mm-hmm. or something like that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
So, but if jig that stuff, jig the jagged stuff for lings and rockfish and everything else, and you'll get the occasional halibut. But boy, if you're dropping the anchor, you don't want to dropping stuff.
No,
like that, so.
It's called an anchor graveyard.
Yeah. So you got a couple anchors out there that you're going to go out and try to pull, right?
Yeah.
And so do you take one of your boats out there and try and pull it up?
Yep.
Okay, you do.
Yep. You should take an extra bag and
tie
it on. Give me a flotation.
Use two floats.
Yep.
Yeah. And you guys got to see that drill.
I have never experienced pulling an anchor like that
with
in deep
float.
Water with a float like that. It was new. It was fun.
It's a unique boating skill.
Yeah.
It's a skill that's kind of particular to our waters. I mean, I don't know of any other. And you've seen that thing in any other?
No, not in any other situation like that where anybody is. I've seen anchor floats. I've seen them, but well, I mean, you're full on getting on plane.
Yeah.
And while the anchor, to me, as
miles an hour. That's all.
To me, as a new guy sitting there going, okay, usually you roll the anchor up and you idle over here or you pull it loose, and then I'm sitting there and I hear the motors go, whoom, and I'm going, but it's still hooked on. That feels like. That's that steep learning curve of
it is.
Being able to know what you need to do.
And there's a safety factor that absolutely. Has to be played in. And I talked to all these guys about that. You know, if you're going to pull with an anchor on the buoy, you don't tie it off to your stern of your boat.
No. Exactly.
It's a dangerous situation.
It is.
And it doesn't care how big a boat you have. It can pull that stern down. And, you know, like you could have a simple situation where your rear hatch cover had come off your transom were pulling on an anchor.
Yeah.
And you swamp your boat or flip it over. I mean, it's simple things like that that could happen.
So
more lift off the bow.
So for our listeners that don't know what the hell we're talking about, here's the thing. On the Columbia River in particular, which is kind of where it started, you guys were using anchor floats because the Columbia River is an extremely busy waterway with all kinds of shipping going on it. So you get big barges, and the big barges throw a big wake. So for years, guys were putting anchor floats on their anchor so let the float take the beating of the big waves, and then there's a line that comes back from that buoy so that, you know, your boat rides easier on it. Then guys started using an anchor chalk system that's a one-way rider, a one-way pulley on your anchor line, and in that way they pulled their anchor by running you know away from the float while the boats made off at the bow, obviously. So what we do here and what guys do in Washington is much the same. You put a big ring on your anchor line. I use a solid 8-inch seine ring.
That's what I use.
And then you snap a float. In my case, I got a big A3 Dutchman or a big one, A4. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So so that thing's riding on your back. Leave it there. You drop the anchor with that ring on there, and of course the anchor drops down, float stays on the surface. When you go to pull your anchor, in my case, I got a winch up there, so I pull a rope, I take a turn on the cleat, so I'm not pulling directly on the winch. And what I like to do is back away a little bit so I can see the float. And then, the helm's on the starboard, so I want that anchor float on the starboard. I'll back away so I see the float, and then you run that direction, and you watch that ball come right down the side of the boat. That's the freaky part. Because
when the ball goes underwater 3 feet deep next to the wheelhouse of the boat, it's hung up.
Yeah. Yes. And then, so if it is hung up, then it's going to pull your boat in a tight circle.
Correct.
Okay. So you have to pull super hard on that and try to straighten out. And so you're not just pulling in a circle, but in that circle, sometimes you'll get it to pull loose. And even with my boat with, twin 300 Yamahas, I actually bent my anchor. I got a new anchor this year, and it just shows you how strong 7/16 3-strand nylon is. Mm-hmm. That you're pulling on that thing with 600 horses, and the anchor bent before the rope broke, mm-hmm. And so, but the reason you anchor is you got a chance to stay on one spot and chum it up and bring the fish to you.
Yeah, they're scent feeders, so you're 45-minute wait time.
Bingo. And so yesterday when we were on the dock cleaning halibut, day before yesterday, yep. Actually, yep. We talked to some guys, well, we were on anchor for an hour, and we didn't get a halibut. It's like, dude, that first hour.
We're
getting started.
And
if it doesn't work in an hour, I just tell guys to let another 50 feet of line out.
Yeah, and you move down
and
your
scent. And just move back a little bit.
Yeah, and you're choking up on your scent trail. Mm-hmm. That's the deal. Mm-hmm. But that's and we've got texts already from folks that are on anchor today and somebody got one in 40 minutes or got a 40-pound halibut in the first 20 minutes, something like that. Mm-hmm. And that's wonderful. But you need to stay on that spot. And the hour, I tell everybody, as soon as we drop the anchor, we're not going to get a bite for an hour.
That's when the captain takes a nap.
Yeah, no, dude, not me. I'm rigging baits because I know they're coming.
It's called a halibut nap.
Yeah, believe me, that's one, a lot of things I do on the boat. Sleep is not one of them.
So, anyways, if you're gonna pull an anchor with a buoy and a ring, you just need to be safe and cautious about it. And everybody needs to pay attention to what they're doing. If you're trying it at home or whatever you're doing, just be safe about it.
Yeah, and never, ever, ever make your anchor off to the stern of a boat under any circumstances.
No, ever, never.
Under any circumstances. Boats are made to go forward. They're good at going forward. They're not good at going backwards, especially when there's a load on that transom, and that's definitely when tragedies occur. Joel, thanks for stepping in for a segment.
No problem.
Glad
you had me.
You know, dude, always good. Log on to fishbaronoff.com. You can come on up here to Sitka and have your own adventure, and it's a lot more gratifying when you do it yourself, one of Joel's boats, no question about it.
You'll have an awesome time.
But plan ahead, book early.
Yeah,
yes,
study.
You do. You need to book early.
Yeah, study. No question. Yeah, you're already booking up for next year.
And the year after.
No kidding.
Yep.
Wow. That's awesome. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, coming up next, the critically acclaimed award-winning Northwest Outdoor Report right here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
The American Pacific Mortgage Northwest Outdoor Report, also known as the Sportsman Sports Center, is brought to you by the great folks at HomeLoanAngler.com, your guide to the most competitive rates, buy or refi.
Possession Bar Ling's still on tap. Nick Kester says there's some ling cod to be caught off Possession Bar near Everett. Nick's been fishing live sand dabs, says he's been landing a few every day just off the bar. The biggest ling cod Nick has released so far has been a 44-incher. There's a huge 13-foot ebb spring tide this weekend. It's going to make ling fishing really tough. But folks can catch some of that flood tomorrow for lings, and Nick says the soaker on Monday will fish really, really well until around noon. Ling cod season in Puget Sound runs through June 15th.
and Moses Lake Solid for walleye. Austin Mosier from Austin's Northwest Adventures says the walleye fishing has been solid on Moses Lake lately. He's been trolling a combination of crankbaits on planer boards, earthworms on a slow death hook to get bites. Austin says the average walleye is between 18 to 22 inches with plenty of fish in the 22 to 27 inch range to keep things interesting. He said he's heard great reports from nearby Banks Lake and also the Kettle Falls area in the Upper Columbia. The walleye fishing has been excellent in both those areas as well.
My favorite freshwater fish to eat. They're just phenomenal. Moses Lake Open next week. The Northwest Bass Moses Lake Open tourney is next Saturday, June 5th. Registration deadline is June 4th for the event. Anglers can get registration info online at nwbass.com.
Another shrimp date for the Sound. WDFW just announced another shrimping opportunity for several marine areas in Puget Sound. Marine areas 8-1, 8-2, 9, and 11 will be open from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Wednesday, June 2nd for shrimping. Remember, the limit is 80 shrimp per person, and each angler's limit needs to be held in a separate container.
Yep, we're just about a month away from the crab opener there,
yeah,
too, Bruce.
Here we
no
go.
Question, no doubt. Skagit River opens for Chinook this week. Kevin John at Holiday Sports in Burlington is fired up about the King opener on the Skagit on June 1st. Kevin thinks that upper river should be in fishable shape for the opener. It's been a little high because of the warm temperatures and runoff currently. The upper Skagit will be open from Rockport up to the Marble Mount Bridge for King Salmon, and the Cascade will also be open for Hatchery Kings 5 days a week and closed on Sundays and Mondays. Kevin John said side drifting or bobber dog and eggs is popular on the Skagit. Folks will either fish eggs or twitch jigs on the Cascade River. He says maglet plugs also produce a fair amount of kings for the upper Skagit fishermen. The upper Skagit is open from June 1st through July 15th for Chinook salmon.
Halibut and lings off the coast. Dave Johnson from Kitsap Marina in Port Orchard says most of the fleet stayed in for the halibut opener this past Thursday. He and quite a few others didn't want to deal with 10-foot seas and 20 knots of wind. Can't blame them. On days when the ocean's been favorable, the fishing's been great for both halibut and lingcod, though. Johnson said the deepwater lingcod fishing has been dynamite, and from June 1st to June 15th, there's no deepwater restriction in place in Marine Area 2, so folks can target both halibut and lingcod offshore on the same trip. Johnson noted that the native ports of Nia Bay and Lepush will remain closed until October when it will be reviewed again.
That's a tough one. We'll touch on that after the report here. More spring Chinook days on the Lower Columbia. Spring Chinook fishing is open on the Lower Columbia River from Tongue Point to Bonneville Dam, and then it'll be open again from June 1st through the 15th. Biologists believe there are enough spring Chinook in the Columbia to offer more angling opportunity. Have upgraded that upriver spring Chinook forecast from 7,500 to just under 90,000 springers.
Last razor dig tomorrow. Razor clam diggers got four more days this week to target razor clams at the beach on the Washington coast. The beach was open this past Monday, Wednesday, again yesterday, and will be open for a final day tomorrow. The low tide tomorrow is at 10:26 a.m., and digging usually starts around 2 hours before the low tide. The limit is 15 razor clams per person, and you've got to keep the first 15 razor clams that you dig. This is the last razor clam dig of the season, and WDFW will be starting their yearly stock assessment before looking towards clam digs in the fall.
Cougar breaks into a Freda home. A cougar rattled the neighborhood in a Freda this week. On Tuesday, the cougar was seen running through the neighborhood and jumping fences with ease. It eventually ended up jumping through a screen door and into a house where the homeowner was outside. Police officers and fish and game managers tranquilized the big cat as it tried to escape through a window. It came to rest in the kitchen sink of the house, and luckily, no one was injured.
Everybody was fired up.
Hey, it's, you know, that's Wazoo country. They're all cougar fans. I do not see the issue with that. So we had a text earlier in the show, and I want to relate the situation with Nia Bay and Lepush being closed this year to that situation. From the 253, with Nia Bay's reservation closure, do you see WDFW moving any of that 90,000 as a quota to areas 2 and 4? I don't think they're going to do that. Number one, it's so late in the season for a quota shift like that, plus the fact that folks are accessing Marine Area 3, Lepush, from Westport, but the more popular move is guys launching at CQ, Bruce, where we fished earlier this year, and then running around the corner to Nia Bay, which we did on a subsequent trip out there for black rockfish and lings. So it's if Nia Bay is that easily accessed from CQ, and they, you're still going to get boats up from there. I really don't see any type of quota shift happen. It's just kind of an unnecessary complication.
It's not something they like to do.
They don't like to do that too often because somebody's going to get left out, and it's a tough deal. So, you know, I think we're kind of working our way out of this situational jam, if you will, and things will be a little bit more back to normal. But for now, you still have a good halibut opportunity out there on the coast. So, tell you what, we're going to pop out of here for a quick break. We're coming back at you with a Wildcraft Wheelhouse, and here's the deal. An unprecedented number of boaters, okay? Absolute art. So where are they specifically getting their safety and operational info, and where should they be getting it? Text us up, too, if you got any questions. 710-710, powered by Yamaha Outboards. Right back here on the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
Get in, sit down, hold on, and listen up. You're in the RenaissanceMarineGroup.com's Wheelhouse, brought to you by Wildcraft, Duckworth, and Northwest Boats.
Welcome to the Wheelhouse, brought to you by Wildcraft Duckworth Northwest Boat, also known as Renaissance Marine Group. And in the Wheelhouse today, of course, we have Bruce Larson, Marine Industry Insider, Phil Spielgene. Thanks for stepping in, Phil.
Man, I love it.
Appreciate your perspective, no question about it. So, with the current situation we find ourselves in, Bruce, it's you know, we have again an unprecedented amount of new boaters, right? And the learning curve for these folks is vertically steep. So where are you seeing, what are the sources that folks are using to get their information? You know, where are they getting their safety and operational info on these boats?
The good thing is there is so much more information available, whether it's YouTube, whether it's social media platforms, whether it's the various resources like the Outdoor Line provides, any other of the regional, guide services, et cetera, that have got information out there that they can search, they can dig into, they can read what other experiences have been and figure out how that might apply to what we've just acquired or that case. And I think you're seeing an awful lot of that. The hopefully the biggest thing is nobody feels embarrassed to ask a question because there's just so much to begin to grasp to get into that safe position of being able to use the products and get out there.
I see the most bad information on stuff like Facebook, right?
True.
Where they're going to get like, okay, wait, when's this fishery open? When's that open? Gee, when's a good safe time to go, no go? You should not be asking that on wide open social media platforms. Right. I'm telling you, there's keyboard knuckleheads out there that are going to purposely feed you bad stuff, right?
True. The focused
yes.
areas, the focused groups, the focused activities
yeah.
are
but,
what you want to get
but
to.
Like you meant, yeah, there's some bulletin boards out there that, will definitely help you out. And again, I mentioned earlier in the show that Chapman's Piloting, just go order it on Amazon. I'm begging you, just get it, I don't work for Chapman's Piloting. I don't work for Amazon, nothing. But this is a wonderful resource for anybody that runs a boat. And,
right.
And from everything from dock lines and the correct size of fender whips to where how you should tie a boat, which line should go to which cleat and when, where, and all that kind of stuff. And it's just basic stuff. And so Joey Pyburn and I have had the pleasure of having Shane Palcoa on the boat. And Shane never fished before, and it's been up here for a couple of years now. And so it really struck me that, how can we, get him, and he got up to speed super, super fast. Free safeties are pretty coachable in that way. But the thing of it is, though, it just really struck me that, again, since I've been doing this literally my whole life, and have a background in it, it's such a vertical learning curve challenge. Now, you, Phil, have seen, even the use of downriggers in widely disparate locations and applications and stuff like that. So from us to the Great Lakes to here. So, we always make the comment and it's quite true that, the Pacific Northwest gave the Great Lakes the salmon and the Great Lakes gave us the downrigger in return. But the applications of these tools in these two fisheries couldn't be more different.
Completely different. The style of the boat, what you're doing day to day, what you do when you're not downrigger fishing. Everything else that goes into the day of what am I going to plan for today, how I'm going to do these things. And it's so incredibly interesting to see the application of that tool, that's, you have to remove that assumed constraint that, oh, this is only for the freshwater. Oh, this is only for the saltwater. Oh, this is only for center console boats. And I'm sitting here on a boat off the coast of Miami trolling for kingfish at 6 miles an hour. And
with downriggers.
With triple engine, you know, 300s, and with the same exact downriggers that I had with you yesterday, trolling at 2.5 miles an hour in, you know, 150 feet of water, catching these fish off the bottom, right, like that. And then to turn around and go on a walleye boat in the Great Lakes to catch the, I'm not going to call it the same salmon, but the same salmon,
right,
you know, out of the back of kind of a bass boat with the downrigger on it, doing just the multi-species type gig on it, and the application of those things. So all of us across the board, we can really help all of these other boaters. We can help these other things, help these other people out using the golden rule. How would I want to be treated at the dock? How would I want to know? How would I, because maybe this is my first time to Alaska to see you trolling in those manners for a salmon, but you know, I get how one of these things works. You know, how can we, that doesn't mean it is not valid information going back and forth.
I love that. The golden rule, boat unto others as you would have others boat unto you.
Exactly. You know, there's a modicum of patience that's required to be a successful fisherman. If you ask me, all of the professional fishermen that I'm so blessed to get on the boats with them that are just experts, patience.
So me yelling at the customers yesterday in the boat about my swivels, that was
patience. I mean, patience is, I guess it's a sliding scale, depending on the situation.
Well, it was cut the knot.
Cut the knot.
Don't cut the swivel.
Yeah, don't cut the swivel. that's fascinating because even in those, you know, using downriggers in those kingfish tournaments in particular, they use monofilament on those downriggers, which is why Canon has those stainless steel spools. And they get a fish on, they cut that mono.
Yep.
And they keep on going because they've got to go get that fish. They don't have time for that downrigger to get that ball up.
We talked about it in the boat. It's all about keeping the hooks in the water in the prime location for the maximum amount of time. I don't care if you're catching a crappie in a pond in southern Oklahoma or a gorgeous, you know, kingfish or a salmon, or it doesn't matter. It's about getting yourself in that right spot as quickly as you can and keeping it there
as long as possible.
And that's where I've seen the evolution of the industry go, is helping you maximize that time on the water, whether it's actually getting to your destination faster, getting, you know, away from the dock to the grounds, or just making things a bit simpler on the boat, that you're keeping your gear in the water for a longer period of time, and that's a function of the amount of fish you're gonna
fishing efficiency.
There you go.
Phil grabbed that term crafted that one, and it's appropriate. I mean, that's what everything that is being done from an innovation standpoint, from a change standpoint, is all geared to.
And the improvement of the sonar in particular, the high chirp, the stuff we're seeing now on high chirp, and you know, with the new transducer installation, that through-hull transducer, the ability to not lose bottom contact at hull speed in depths of excess of 300 to 400 feet. Mm-hmm. To me, that's where the rubber meets the road, because despite the fact that I made the comment earlier in the show that our marine sonar, our crowdsourced, you know, fishing charts or sonar charts, if you will, in the case of Navionics, have gotten so much better, there's still a lot out there that's not on chart. And I showed you some of that yesterday as we come around a corner, you know, of a cape, and I go, look, there's a wash rock right there, and it's not on the chart. That's a bad thing to not have on a chart.
On a chart, yeah.
But when we're running from one area to another, that's when you're going to uncover this stuff, because you're not necessarily looking for it, but you're going to find it. Okay. And I actually did a little video on this. On Raymarine's ability in particular to pause the sonar, scroll back, and place a waypoint on that sonar screen, because it saved the location. But the more you look at the sonar, the better you're going to get with it. The better you're going to get with it, the more things you're going to observe and the trends you're going to observe. For instance, we got on that bite yesterday, and we were marking all kinds of fish, and we were marking all kinds of bait, and the tide was going down. And I go, look, this is a low tide drill, guys. This is a low tide drill. What happened the second it started to flood? Gone.
Dead.
It was
disappeared.
Over.
Done.
Absolutely over. So on the ebb in this particular bay we were in, there's a bunch of sand lance that are popping out, and they come out, and they eat the little the copepods and stuff, and they dart back into the sand, and these Chinook are in there gorging on them. But the scent of all this is ebbing out of this bay. The minute that stuff starts to flood back in, the scent must go away that stops the kings, but the bait was gone, and the fish were gone. And
it was over.
Yeah. But I mean, did we put the hooks to 10 or 12 Chinook as fast as we could get the doggone gear down? And that's maybe where the swivel comment was made. It's like, look, what do you cut my swivel? What do you, you know? It'd be just because you want to get gear back down in the water. And those folks were having fun doing it.
Having a great
and,
time.
And that's going to be my takeaway from yesterday. If we were able to get these folks on a boat they'd never seen, in a place they'd never seen, and encounter these fish, you know, in a couple on some gear that they hadn't used before.
They were learning, and we forget. We kind of, I use the term, we kind of turn into psychopaths a little bit sometimes.
Oh, 100%.
I see the fish. I see the stuff. I've been doing this my whole life. Yeah. I get fired. It doesn't matter where we're at. You get fired up on it, and we lose a little bit sometimes because now I've got leaders flying. I've got to get hooks in the water. And this lady is just dancing, literally dancing on the deck with excitement. Like, okay.
She wouldn't have been any more lit up if you had plugged her into a light socket.
Absolutely.
I mean, seriously, it was hilarious. But yeah, and I like that, the fishing psychopath or fishopath. Anybody that's ever fished with me knows I'm a fishopath.
Laying in bed at night, you know, you're talking about, I've been Google fishing this area for a month now that I knew that I was able to come up here and like make this happen, straight to the chart, straight to Google Maps, straight on your Zoom. I don't know head from tails from this area, but yeah, and then you could come and then you can start correlating those things that I saw this on here. Now I'm correlating with the chart. Now I'm correlating with your technique. Now I'm going, you know what, maybe I could bring some of my bros up here and rent one of these fish Baron off boats and go out.
That's
and maybe actually
Bingo.
Hook something up here because I'm not flying all the way from Georgia all the way up here with the 10-foot long fishing rods and all this stuff. I got to have an outfit like this to set me up to go do this. But that's a commitment to come this far. It's a commitment to do
it
this. Well, anything legendary takes risk and commitment, and this is a legendary place to come fishing, right?
It is. You know, it's Sitka's been the angling experience of my life. Question about it, and it's an obvious point, but one that bears stating. It takes a fisherman. It takes fish to make a fisherman.
Absolutely.
And you are going to learn from everything you catch out here, and that's really what it's all about. And today we have a really unique weather challenge. I mean, we have this gale coming in from the south, so we're actually going to have to run into it to find protected waters, and when the weather is making those fishing location decisions for you is not an ideal situation.
No.
I mean, you want to be able to go where you want to go, but you have to do it safely. And if we can help some of the new boaters that are out there, you know, understand that their activities on the water are completely governed by the winds and by the weather and the tides.
Respect.
Yeah, you have to
respect it.
You have to. I picked enough people out of the water to, you know, and I'm afraid of the rocks, and I'm, you know, and I'll never lose that. Just because, you know, I mean, I know that the trust that Bruce has put into me, you know, with regard to this boat, and it's a big responsibility to have people on these waters and be productive, but you know, enjoy this, but also do it safely.
You know, these guys earlier, it's terrible to see sad eyes. It's terrible to, you know, kind of let people down. Nobody wants to tell somebody something they don't want to hear because they've been so, you know, so anticipating getting here and seeing this, but you know what? You'll be able to talk to them tomorrow.
Yeah.
They learned a powerful lesson about make sure you have enough days to go fishing because you can't control the weather anywhere or in Alaska. But it's a much better lesson to learn right here at the land on the dock than a powerful lesson that the sea will teach you.
Yeah.
You know, with some 50-degree water in the face,
and,
right?
And what we're talking about here is, there's 12 of my, you know, former coworkers in Seattle Fire. They're here today to fish, and Joel has, you know, very wisely kept them on the dock because we got a gale that's going to push up the, you know, knots, you know, up to, you know, 40, 45 knots in the offshore water. So we're keeping those guys in today, but don't worry. If there's one thing about firefighters, they're resilient.
They're resilient.
All right, we're gonna pop out of here for a quick break and wrap things up with the hottest report we've heard all week and the techniques you need to succeed. It's RoyRobinsonChevy.com's Really? Where? And it's next here in the Outdoor Line, 710 ESPN, Seattle.
No way.
You gotta be kidding me.
Really?
Where? Just coming back from the island of Tinny and the Lady.
Where'd you get him, man? I'm not
going to
tell anybody.
The ocean turned red.
Hey, man, can you tell me where you got them?
I'll never put on a life jacket again.
Welcome to RoyRobinsonChevy.com's
Really?
Where?
Where?
Roy Robinson Chevrolet RV will take you anywhere. Really?
It's Memorial Day weekend, so you better get ready for holiday travel. Whether you're looking for a Class A, Class B, a Super C, a travel trailer, fifth wheel, toy hauler, or pop-up, head over to RoyRobinsonRV.com. You're going to find what fits you and your style of outdoor fun. All right. Really, where is the hottest report we heard all week? And I tell you what, with the numbers of Chinook that I'm getting the vibe about, and you know, up here and down the coast, you know, you've got two Chinook opportunities going on that just opened up today. One of them's in Toilet Bay, a saltwater opportunity, definitely a boat-only show, and 100% a downrigger show. So, you got to troll around and find these, you know, find these critters and get that done. If you're from the bank, you can access a really cool Chinook fishery that also opens up today on the Skycomish River. We touched a little bit about that earlier in the show, about using floats and jigs or floats and baits from the bank. And there's a number of places you're going to be able to get that done. So if it was me, I would definitely be on one of those two places. You've also got some opportunities, you know, for lingcod throughout Puget Sound. Today's a halibut day as well, so lots going on.
But then Marine Area 2, starting on Tuesday, you got halibut and ling.
Yes,
no deep water restrictions.
There you go.
Now, why not? Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, it's and we got, speaking of white meat, we got to eat a piece of white Chinook at the Channel Club last night.
Boy,
you want to talk about phenomenal? That was quite the dinner. If you ever get in town, get a hold of that one for sure. And we got a question from the 206 on 710 powered by Yamaha Outboards. I only caught the last part of the information about Nia Bay. Could you mention what's going on in Nia Bay? Yes. Both the Macaws and which is the Nia Bay area and the LaPush area will not be open this year for non-tribal folks. And that's a tough one to access both Marine Area 4, which is Nia Bay, and Marine Area 3, which is LaPush. So if you want to fish either of those waters, you got to come up from Gray's Harbor to access Marine Area 3, which is a tough open ocean run, or you're going to launch it at CQ and turn around a corner and get to Nia Bay. It's going to be that same type of situation going on this summer. But thanks for stepping in today, guys. I really appreciate it. It's a lot of fun, and we learned a few things. And Phil, your experience, you know, in a wide variety of fisheries and a wide variety of challenges on the water. I mean, you know, you bring a completely new aspect to what's going on.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and I appreciate you having me up here. It's just been an incredible learning experience for myself, and I can't wait to do it again. And I mean, just to get mentioned in the same breath as Tom Nelson is maybe the number one thing that will be on my resume.
He was nice the whole time.
Right up until now. Yeah,
until the dripping sarcasm. Hey, what happened to boat unto others as you would have others boat unto you? I mean, what happened to that, man?
That was a genuine compliment. Every word of it. It was but seriously, I appreciate you guys having me up here and seeing all these things and learning and bringing some of the knowledge that I have from the other markets to you guys too.
To talk about some of this stuff
and how can we make this a rich boating life for all of us in the future. And I can't wait to come back on the show at some point in the future. And
no doubt.
And
well, I hope you come up this summer, kind of do when the boat's down in Puget Sound.
Oh yeah, we'll come down to Puget Sound. I'll bring some guys. I'll bring some official people with me, and then you can maybe drill into my cortex a little bit deeper. Things that are not fishing.
Yeah. So what do you kind of see coming down the pike with regard to refinements? I mean, you got to see that Duckworth for the first time through these guys' eyes that we had on the boat yesterday, you know, and they were impressed. I mean, what have you kind of got your eye on? What's top of mind on the product development front for Renaissance Marine Group? I know it's an open-ended question and a tough one, but
yeah, it is, because every little iteration that you try and do, you focus on making the boat function as much better as you possibly can. So everything from, you know, hatch sizes to material on the deck, you know, that sort of thing. But the single biggest key is dealing with that geography question in terms of
what works where,
what works there, but also geography on the boat itself.
Oh, I got
you know,
you.
The size yeah, of yeah. that fishing deck is composed as opposed to the size of the cabin. You know, what kind of features you want to make sure you're accommodating, whether it be factory installed or whether it's dealer aftermarket, consumer installed, that sort of thing. So, It's just a continued refinement, little revisions here until all of a sudden it's, let's take several of these and we'll incorporate them into a major change.
Well, and I just go back to when you came up in my weld craft a few years ago and you brought a bunch of guys from the mm-hmm. factory and the fact that, you know, the factory guys, you know, had never been on this fishery before. And then, you know, and I get back to visit the factory and we get to talk more, but so many of the things that we discussed on that trip came to fruition in this next model year. And that to me, that is so important to have people like yourselves that have an influence on the industry that are participating in these fisheries that are very, very important to everybody up and down the coast. And that's the seat of the pants, rubber meets the road. Product development is coming up here and actually doing it.
Absolutely.
So, no question about it.
Some of the greatest opportunity is going to be literally just continuing to incorporate the advances in technology and the finite little changes that are being made, electronics, propulsion, controls, et cetera, into the boat itself.
No question about it. If you missed any of the show, jump on MyNorthWest.com and hit the podcast on TheOutdoorLine.com. Of course, Apple Podcasts, you got full shows over there. On social media, hit Joey at Joey Pyburn on Instagram, at Rob Ensley, at The Outdoor Line on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. For Matt Nelson putting up with us in our Seattle studios, Bruce Larson, Renaissance Marine Group, industry insider Phil Spielge, and of course, Joel Martin from FishBaronOff.com. This is Tom Nelson. This has been The Outdoor Line on 710 ESPN, Seattle.